The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 116. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where we bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefer.com to stay up to date with the latest guests and anything else that I have going on. This week, excited to have John Sisick with us. John is the author of Maximal Interval Training. He's the president of Human Performance Services down in Texas, and has written numerous books, numerous articles, and just does a great job. And so I wanted to bring him on, talk about his new book, Maximal Interval Training, and just kind of some of the benefits that strength coaches in all areas can take away from it. And so I know you're going to get a ton out of the episode. Before we get started, though, I want to make sure we recognize all of our sponsors. We have Ignition APG, we have Play USA, Sorinex, and of course Elite Form. And Sports Illustrated just did a recent article, and you know, they talked about, you know, Catapult and some of the other technology companies, but you know, they really go into specifically how Notre Dame's using Elite Form, but just the fact that Elite Form was there from kind of the beginning of this this big technology push. And you know, what I really enjoy, and what I noticed right away, and why we put it in at Tennessee when I was there, was the fact that it integrated so seamlessly with what we had going on. And that's been the biggest thing for me. I didn't want to take away from our coaching in any way. And so if you're in the market, you're looking at, you know, you're measuring force and velocity and things along those lines, you know, check out EliteForm.com. Reach out to Skip. You know, have them put together an estimate for you. That, you know, what's really cool about those guys is that, you know, they really are trying to do it the right way and give back to the community and constantly be a resource. And then, you know, obviously the business aspect. But great guys, great company. And couldn't say enough great, you know, great things about them. So check out EliteForm.com. Want to get to this episode. Know you're going to like John Sisick and take a lot away from this. So sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Super excited. I just got done reading this book, Maximum Interval Training. I'm going to hold it up, John. Right here, there's that bad boy. Yep. Maximum Interval Training by John Sisick and Jay Dawes. And you guys did a fantastic job with the book, and so I wanted to get you on the show. But, man, truly appreciate you taking time out of your day and coming on and sharing with everybody.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Coach.
John, you know, I want to get in a little bit because, again, I think your story is a little unique, especially with what you're doing now, kind of how you got into strength and conditioning and then kind of the path that it's taking you to your current role.
Well, I was a I was a really average Olympic lifter and a really average baseball player. And I figured out really quickly that I enjoyed the process of training more than I enjoyed competition in my glorious athletic career.
Yeah.
And so that kind of led me into, it really makes sense to get paid to do what you love.
No question.
And, you know, if you enjoy the process of training sometimes more than the competition, then it makes sense to get paid to do that. You know, I joined the NSCA in 92, which almost qualifies me as an old fart. Not quite, but we're getting there. You know, and I got certified 93, 94. The years go on.
I was 94.
The fields changed a lot.
Right.
And that was kind of part of the motivation behind the book, but we'll get into that later. You know, I did the Olympic Training Center coaching thing. And I liked that. And then I got married and everything changes, you know, and I started thinking about things like job security and hours. I mean, things everybody deals with. And so I started to go into the work for myself route, and I've been doing that for a while. And mostly, you know, it seems like everybody specializes in working with elite athletes, or, you know, you'd think there were 10 million of them around, the way everybody specializes in that. What I've liked to specialize in is working with coaches and focusing more on the educational side of things. So you see me do a lot of writing, you see me doing a lot of traveling to clinics, working with coaching staff, things like that. I do a lot of work with track and field. I do a lot of work with baseball and basketball, which are also two sports that I coach. And I have a child with a disability, so that's gotten me into the working with the disabled population. So I do a lot of programs for people with Down syndrome, people with intellectual developmental disabilities, and that got me a long way around into teaching special ed. So nowadays I teach all day and I coach baseball, basketball, and consult all night. So so much for, you know, typical hours, right?
So yeah, you have no hobbies either then, right?
Exactly.
Well, man, the book was turned out fantastic, and I want to kind of get into that topic because I think it's, like you said, I mean, the field has changed a lot. You know, right now with CrossFit and, you know, with high intensity interval training and all these different, you know, acronyms and terms and the whole deal, kind of really, what is maximum interval training?
You know, maximum interval training, to me, for most people and athletes especially, is going to be a supplement to everything else. It's not going to be the main training focus. It's going to be what we've got to do for, you know, the buzzword nowadays is metabolic conditioning. You and I used to call it getting into shape. So what are we going to do for that? And what are we going to do for that in a way that's not going to break the athlete down? We could run 40 hundreds, but then we're also going to have to deal with some pulled hamstrings, some shin injuries. You know, we're going to have a lot of issues with that. And by the way, we also just taught our athletes to run really slowly with bad form. So what are some ways that we can do to approach getting our athletes in shape? And that's kind of really the focus of the book. There's some things in there for everybody, so that if you're not working with athletes, maybe you're just, you know, Joe Fitness, there's stuff in there for you with that in mind. But, you know, Jay and I kind of wrote this kind of with more of an athletic standpoint in mind. You know, I was on the item writing committee for the CSCS exam a few years ago. And the idea behind this, the exam, is it's supposed to be entry-level qualifications for a strength coach. And when we were all sitting in that room working on that, it had been a long time. And we were thinking, the entry-level qualifications are a whole lot different than they were in 92 when I got into this. You know, when I got into this, it was all about the Olympic lifts. It was about the squat, the bench, the deadlift, a few other supplemental exercises. That was really about it. You know, we were starting to talk about periodization. We were all starting to go to Dr. Stone's lectures about that at the conferences. But this is where it all started from. And you fast forward more than 20 years now, and an entry-level strength coach has got to know all of that. Got to be familiar with kettlebells. Got to be familiar with battle ropes, got to be familiar with strongman training, sleds, sandbags, sprinting, agility, core, mobility. I mean, you know, you name it. The list of skills that an entry-level strength coach has to have now is so much bigger than when I got into this and when you got into this. And there is no single resource yet that anyone can go to pull all that up. So that was kind of the motivation behind Jay and I putting this book together, is let's have something all together where, you know, if you're the kind of person that's just looking for exercises, well, we've got that with everything that I just named.
Right.
If you're the kind of person that's looking for a program, we've got those. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And if you're the kind of person that's looking for a, here's the whys behind all of this, we approached it from that standpoint too. You know, with program design, the way I wanted to approach this is not just a, here's, let's beat somebody up with a kettlebell workout, but let's show you if you have athletes that are training for strength and power, how would you integrate a kettlebell workout into that?
Right.
How would you integrate, you know, metabolic conditioning into that kind of a workout without injuring them, you know, or overtraining them? And so that's kind of the approach we took with all of that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you touched on, you know, young strength coaches, and there's a lot of young strength coaches that listen to this show. You know, when you're hit with all these different possible, you know, implements and modalities and programs and philosophies and all this type of stuff, what advice would you give a young coach now that, you know, in terms of how to decipher through the mess a little bit and how to really kind of become a jack of all, you know, so that eventually you could be a master of something, you know?
You know, no doubt there's a lot of marketing and hype with all of this. And I mean, a lot of these tools are just now beginning to be researched. So practice and research, it takes research time to catch up with practice. And you get any coach in any discipline and they're going to tell you the same thing about that. But I think it's important, you know, every strength coach has their comfort area. You know, for me, it was the Olympic lifts because that's how I started out. And of course, to this day, everybody's got to do those lifts.
Right.
So everybody has their comfort area. But I think I don't want to use the word play, but you got to experiment a little bit outside of it. I think some of it's got to be on yourself. If I know why I made that stupid mistake, I can coach somebody else not to do that. And so I think there's some of that that's got to go on. And you got to get out of your comfort zone, and you got to experiment with some of these things yourself. You know, there's no best, but just because it's not what you personally do, don't exclude it just because of that. You know, some strength coaches want to bodybuild. I don't know that that's appropriate for my 400-meter runners, you know. But what you want to do is great, but we need to get outside of our personal comfort zone to apply it to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And I always say there's no best. There's best for you, best for your philosophy, and there's best for your athlete's needs. And all those things kind of got to fit together.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I really enjoyed about the book, and this goes back to my Mark Asanovich days and being in a high-intensity program for a while, you know, he would always say that muscles don't have eyeballs. They don't know if you do one set, two sets, three sets. They don't know if you use barbells, dumbbells, selectorized equipment, or whatever. You know, but the takeaway for me was, you know, there's lots of different ways to overload the muscle. And, you know, you throw a lot of tools in the book, sandbags and kettlebells and things along those lines. You know, one of which that you talk about quite a bit is body weight. You know, and now with, you know, with youth sports and, you know, shoot, even our, I mean, we're right now, we're trying to put together an on-the-field soccer training program for one of our days of training because of just the logistics of getting them over to the building and back. Talk a little bit about the benefits of body weight training and how you can incorporate, you know, through your program design. I mean, if you were in my shoes right now, we're going out and walking out and training a soccer program for one of our three lifts from the week, what's that program design look like, especially using a lot of body weight type of exercises?
Well, you know, I think body weight's got a great advantage in that you don't need any extra equipment. It's inexpensive, and you just need a little bit of space. And boy, if you can get athletes outside to exercise, I always think that's a good benefit too. Because a lot of the time, that's where the sports are played. So body weight exercises you can do pretty much head to toe. It kind of depends on what you want to focus on. I think you can do anything from, this is going to be a main conditioning focus, so we're going to do exercises for time. And I like doing that approach with a lot of these interval training tools better than doing sets and repetitions because, you know, if I tell you to do 10 push-ups, that might be hard or easy, and it might be a lot harder or a lot easier for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say we're going to do push-ups for 60 seconds, then that kind of equates that a little bit for everybody. So one of the things I would do is I would approach this from time. And we're all kind of used to thinking about that when it comes to metabolic conditioning in terms of work-to-rest ratio, so it fits in real well there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can adjust those. You can think about, okay, so if we're going to do a body weight exercise, are we going to rest after it? Are we going to do another body weight exercise, same body part, different? or are we going to do a different exercise mode in between? Like, maybe we're doing a bodyweight exercise, and then we go sprint 20 yards, and then go back to a bodyweight. So all of these are things that you can manipulate to make this more difficult or less difficult, depending on what you want to accomplish and depending on where your athletes are.
Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you design programs, like you said, you mentioned earlier, with sometimes it takes a long time for research to catch practice.
Yeah.
You know, and part of that, you know, you have to be able to still prove the fact that you're seeing results, you know, without the research sometimes. You spent a chapter on testing and kind of some of the different tests that you would incorporate if you're implementing some of this type of training. What would be some of the tests that you would recommend strength coaches really take a look at when implementing some of these types of protocols?
Me personally, I like going low technology on everything, but that's me showing my age. You know, that's not always sellable, especially if you're working with higher level athletes or if you're in a private coaching environment. You know, sometimes being able to sell the technology is important. But me personally, I like going more low technology with the stopwatch, with the weights, with the measuring tape. You know, the standing long jump tells you an awful lot about an athlete. It tells you, are they fast? Are they powerful? Can they use their strength? Do they have strong legs? So I like, lack of a better term, I like more old school tools like that. You know, vertical, standing long jump, 40, 20, 10, 5-yard sprints, depending on who you're working with. Longer sprints, shuttle runs for metabolic conditioning, longer runs for aerobic conditioning if that's what we're interested in. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got strength tests in the weight room. I think those are all your bread and butter right there. Depending on the kind of sport, you know, you always have to consider what the sport coaches want as well, and you have to factor those things in. Might be looking at medicine ball throws for baseball players. You know, some coaches are going to be big on flexibility, some are not. I mean, it just, you have to give and take a little bit with these things. But I like keeping it simple. Other people are going to go high technology with, you know, infrared timers and
sure,
the Tendo units to check the velocity, force platforms, everything. It just kind of depends on your setting. Most of us don't have that kind of budget, but if you do, I think the important thing about testing is that if you're going to do it and if you're going to commit the athlete's time and their effort to the test, you better use it. Otherwise, I think you have a credibility problem with your athletes. You know, HRV has gotten real trendy over the years, so if sleep studies, and that's great, and if you don't use it, though, you wasted your athlete's time, and they know that. And on the other hand, sometimes you can use testing to build up a complex with the athletes that you didn't mean to. Oh my gosh, your heart rate's not recovering right. And they take that to mean I'm not going to perform very well in the game today.
Right.
You know, sometimes we can create a complex that we didn't mean to. So I think you have to kind of factor those things in and keep that in mind.
Sure. You know, CrossFit has gotten, you know, mixed. You know, it's either you like it or you hate it, kind of. You know, there's really no in between. And, you know, but one of the, you know, and just to be clear where I'm coming from with it, I really enjoy CrossFit from a sports standpoint, from a creativity and ingenuity standpoint. There's tons of great things that you can take from the sport of CrossFit, you know, but I think that's what it is. You know, one of the knocks from a strength and conditioning perspective is the lack of a real clear program design piece. With what you did in the book, I mean, when you really got into program design, you've kind of had, you know, you had kind of a traditional kind of approach to it. You just taken, you know, some interval concepts and protocols and applied them to them. When designing a program specifically, what are the elements that have to be in that?
Well, when you're designing a program, you got to look at the short term and the long term. Short term is this workout. And this workout's got a lot of variables, and those are things like the exercises that you're going to use, and that's based on, all of this is based on goals, it's based on the athlete's training history, it's based on what you have access to. So what kind of exercises, what kind of training modalities are you going to do those exercises with? because I can do a clean with a barbell, I can do it with a dumbbell, a kettlebell, a sandbag, I mean, the list goes on, I can do it with a medicine ball.
Right.
So what do you want to use to do that exercise with? Then you're looking at volume, just traditional sets and reps, rest and recovery, you're looking at the intensity. So that is today's workout. The bigger picture, you have to look at where does today's workout fit into the rest of the program. So if I'm going to go in and I'm going to squat really heavy today, when am I going to do my sprints? Am I going to do them tomorrow? Okay, so when am I going to do my plyometrics? If I do them the next day, now I have hit my legs 3 days in a row. When am I going to recover from all of this?
Right.
So how does it fit in to the program? And then looking at it in the long term, where do we want our athlete to get to? And how does this program fit into getting us there? And testing also, to go back to that, always gives us feedback about, is our program effective? I mean, athletes aren't going to progress in a straight line, but if they're not progressing, it's not their fault. That's something that we need to go back and we need to make some adjustments to.
Right.
So, long story short, you know, CrossFit, good and bad. Things I like about CrossFit is I like the group environment because that motivates people to continue.
No doubt.
You know, it's got a bit of a cult. It's almost like a cult with CrossFit, and that's one of the knocks that everybody's going to see, because the moment you say anything negative, that's going to come out and that's going to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of perpetuates, especially strength coaches aren't going to like that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you about the lack of a program design, although CrossFitters would say that's one of the benefits of this, because it's random, it's true fitness, that sort of thing. I think for Joe Fitness and the general population, if you were not going to exercise and CrossFit will get you to do it, then it's a great thing.
No doubt.
I think that when you're looking at my baseball or my basketball players that have got to do my workouts, they've got to do speed and agility training, they've got to go train for their sport 5 to 7 days a week, and they've got to go compete in their sport, and we've got to figure out how to fit all of those things together very deliberately without injuring them, without overtraining them, and, oh yeah, making sure they're doing good at their sport. I think CrossFit's problematic for that, at least the way it's approached.
Right.
You know, I don't think you can do random and fit all of those pieces together in a way that works, in a way that improves performance. I think there, like with everything else, there are aspects of it that you can borrow and take and mold and make your own.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest ones is I mean, you said, you kind of used the word cult, but I mean, part of that is culture, you know, and as strength coaches, that's exactly what we're trying to create, is we're trying to create a motivating and intense culture and getting our athletes to buy in. And so the fantastic job by that community buying into what they're doing. And we could all take something from that for sure. Well, man, you know, this is great. We always end the show with some resources. And so what is the best piece of coaching advice that you've ever received?
I think the best piece of coaching advice is that there is no best. There is no best. If somebody says best, it's time to run out of the room screaming. There's no such thing. So, and also, you got to experiment some and on yourself.
Absolutely.
Just to figure out what, it's good to know what your athletes are going through. I mean, anybody can make somebody work really hard. Anybody can make somebody sick. But can you put all this together in a way that they're going to progress and become better athletes? Because at the end of the day, it's not about how well they do in the weight room. It's about how well they're doing in their sport. And are we assisting with that, or are we a problem?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, one of the things that you're faced with now, and it's just like with coaches, we're getting, you know, there's all kinds of input from all these different areas.
Right.
Athletes are having the same issue, you know, and part of that is that they feel like they have to get their butt kicked every single time they walk in the room, you know.
Right.
And so having being able to get their attention really quick sometimes, using a 5 or 10 minute workout just so you can get to the meat and potatoes, sometimes that's, you know, sometimes that's what you got to do to get them to buy in. What I really like about, you know, the book and what you put together is that it really fits very nicely with what I do on Wednesdays and Saturdays when we do our blitz packages, where we bring guys in to do extra work. Some guys need to lose weight. Some guys need to work on some hypertrophy in either the upper or lower body. Some guys need to work on their speed and agility. And so putting together short bouts of intense exercise so they feel like they got great work in, you know, it was worth their time coming over, but it wasn't volume-wise. It wasn't really taxing in terms of the overall week. It's a fantastic application of I think, what you put together. And so it really fits good what we're doing and kind of fits along the lines of what we've been coaching and preaching for years. So I appreciated that part of it. We're going to link up your book and your books, actually. But what give us a book that you would recommend strength coaches read.
I think there's a lot of value, even though it's very old, in some of those old Soviet weightlifting textbooks that the folks out at Sportivny Press translated. You know, they're all still spiral bound. You've got Medvedev's System of Multi-Year Training, I think, is a classic, and I think it's almost a must read for everybody. I think that a lot of some of the older texts, I think it's valuable to know where we came from and why we do things the way we do now, especially for younger strength coaches. I think a lot of us take those texts for granted because we used them when we were entering the field. You know, Medvedev's book, which is where the whole periodization concept comes from, is still available out there translated to read. And it's very difficult reading because it's very politicized and everything, and it's their use of language is interesting. But it's still valuable to go through that. You know, some of those old weightlifting texts, same thing. They're politicized. The language is interesting sometimes, but it's valuable to do that because a lot of us still base some of our programs on some of those concepts in those books.
Sure.
So,
well, it's just like with anything. I mean, I one of the things we talk to our interns about all the time is getting. Not they don't do it as much anymore because most sport athletes stay on campus now in the summer. But back when we were getting in, you got manuals, right? Everybody had a manual, and so I'll still go back and look at manuals that I got 20 years ago, and I'll pick something new out of it. You know, used to be when I first got it was just exercises and drills and things like that, but now it's like a way of presenting information or a way to get your athletes to buy in a different way or quote or something, whatever. You know, there's lots of things you can take away. What about an app? Is there an app that you use with your athletes or one for your own productivity?
I use Coach's Eye.
Yeah.
Love it.
Website?
HumanPerformanceServices.com.
There you go. And you do quite a bit of writing, and I would echo the fact that there's tons of great information out there for that, but... Well, John, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate the book. You know, I just actually just received the final edit today of a book that I got coming out, and so I know how much work goes into that. And
it's
so,
fun.
Yeah, no, it's not at all. But it is. It's definitely growth. You know, just like we tell our athletes, you know, you don't get better unless you grow as a person and as a coach and the whole deal. And so. I know how much went into that, and so I truly appreciate you contributing that to our community and would recommend everybody go get it, but also appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come on the show and share a little bit about it. So thanks so much, man.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Coach.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.